The talk that you are about to listen to is a direct voice talk given by Brother Boniface. Brother Boniface speaks on the subject of what life is like on the other side.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Brother Boniface.
Boniface, yeah.
Good morning, Brother Boniface.
Good morning, my son. So many things that people wish to know about. And I should imagine one of the most often asked questions is, what is life like on the other side? And what does it entail? And of course, this is a question that is often put, which by its very nature has so many different answers. For what indeed may apply in one instance to one individual will not necessarily apply to another, because there are no two people who are really in a sense alike. Every individual is an individual, a separate personality. And there are so many diverse conditions of life here according to the individual. Though in a sense it may be possible to place peoples together in groups, it is not really possible to give a complete picture, indeed only a very fragmentary picture of what life may be like for any particular individual. The very diverse nature of man is such, not only by his personal experience of life on earth, but also by the fact of his background, his education or lack of it, and his nationality. There are so many different factors which obviously must apply in regard to every human being as to what amount of progress, if any, is made while upon earth, which by the very nature of itself supplies to a great extent the conditions which any individual must find for themselves when they come here. The old idea, of course, religious idea, that because you accept certain beliefs, certain religious facts, so-called, that by the very nature of having accepted them, you will immediately on death enter into some form of paradise. Or if you have not accepted these beliefs, you will enter into a lower form or very low condition of life. This, by its very nature, cannot be and is not true. I am not suggesting that having religious beliefs in themselves is bad. I think to have religious conviction can be a great asset, providing the individual mind is open to receive new evidence, to see truth as it must be. In many ways, complex, and at the same time, be able to receive new aspects, because truth is so manifest in so many different diverse ways that an individual may be able to accept at one point on life's path certain things, certain aspects of truth, and not be able to accept others because he or she has not reached that point where they're able to understand or appreciate. I think to see our world, you must look more deeply into yours. Because in a sense, our world is a mirrored image of yours. Now this, I do not want you to take, in a sense, too literally, any more than any sensible person in your world will take too literally many of the things which are often accepted as gospel because they appear in the gospels. By this I mean to say that our world is inhabited by souls who once lived on earth, and all that they can bring with them to this world is themselves, their real innermost self. In other words, their soul. In other words, they bring with them exactly what they are by their very nature and inclination, by their very thought, force and being. So our world is, in a sense, a picturization in the first instance of coming over, a reflection of the individual self, and of course, in a sense, a collective image. I think if only people would realize that they must create for themselves by their very being and what that implies, the very conditions which they will find over here. This may not seem very acceptable, and indeed some people, not fully understanding perhaps what I'm trying to convey, will be horrified, because they like to assume that after the journey through the material life, that at death they will enter into a wonderful state of being where all is perfection. I must, of course, disillusion those who think thus. Because a man creates his own heaven and his own hell by his thoughts and his actions while upon earth. All the religious teaching cannot alter the very natural laws which must apply. We can forget, if you like, religious convictions, although if one truly understands the meaning behind the sayings and the doings of the great teachers, the great philosophers, the great souls who have lived upon earth, if we understand truthfully and fully what they intended, what they endeavoured to convey, we shall see quite clearly how true these statements that I make must be. Christ himself said, "For in my Father's house are many mansions." The very implication of this surely is that there are many, many, many spheres or places, call them what you will, where different forms or different conditions of life must be. According to the individual self, he will build for himself and find for himself a suitable, even though it may only be a temporary home, or mansion, or sphere, or place, call it what you will. Christ always said, also said that there are many things which you cannot understand, of which I speak. For there are many things which by their very nature cannot be fully expressed in the language at my command. But these are the things that you must feel from deep within your innermost soul. For these are the things of the Spirit. And the Spirit may perceive though the mind of the man cannot. There are many other things which Christ gave forth to his disciples and to the peoples of his time, which have never been written, which have never been taken down. But all the very important things which Christ gave forth in his mission, if you analyze them, those that you have, you will always find that Christ was concerned not only with the individual soul while yet on earth, but what that soul could become, what it could evolve or develop into in a spiritual sense. Christ realized that the physical body was merely the outer shell, the covering, that the true spirit that dwelt within was capable of achieving tremendous things by its very nature and its very being. The fact that it was indestructible, the fact that the material body was by its very nature limited, it could be while yet the individual was upon earth inhabiting the physical body, it could overcome. Christ knew the power of the spirit and what it could do, what it could achieve. He understood perfectly the laws, the spiritual laws of God. And that is why it is important for human beings while on earth to realize that that which they have created by their very nature, by their very habit, by their very being, that which they have become through the journey of life will constitute the basis of their life here. And since the average person, if one can assume there is such a thing as an average person, he will find for himself a pleasant condition of life. And many of the old fears which beset man will have diminished. But it will not mean that because he has left behind the physical body, that he has immediately left behind physical thoughts. He will naturally, for a time, think in a material sense, because it is not possible to divest oneself immediately of these things which have become so much part of life, which have become habit over so long a period of time. Man will, for a short time, in this period of rehabilitation, find himself living a life not so very much unlike that which he has been accustomed. By that I do not suggest that because he's been in the habit of living in a city and been accustomed to catching a bus and accustomed, if you like, to doing all sorts of material things, that these things will necessarily be here. What I'm trying to suggest is that though those thoughts may still be to some extent within one's consciousness, one will realize immediately that they are no longer necessary. But it does not imply that they will, by their very nature, immediately be dispersed. He will find himself in the condition of life, in some senses, very similar from the natural point of view, that is, of nature and surroundings. Like unto earth, you will find all the fundamental beauties and joys of earth without, shall we say, the petty irritations of daily life, without the very material aspects, because the mere fact that he has realized that this change called death has taken place, he will almost immediately realize that to some extent, at least, physical things cannot apply in this new world in which he finds himself. And of course he will be surrounded by souls, many of whom he has known in past life, material life, who will be there not only to welcome him, but to help him, to instruct him, to guide him. And he will feel almost, you might say, immediately at home. And he will be taken invariably either to a home of one of his relations or friends, or as in some cases to what we would term, or you would term, reception stations, which are like vast, I do not like to use the word hospital, but it's as near as I can explain it, where he will receive temporary assistance, or if you like, although it isn't really applicable, medical care. Not medical in the sense of material medicine, but a kind of mental care, where his mind will be helped to adjust itself to a new thought or a new way of life. And he will be shown many of the interesting places round and about it, because this is a world as real to us as yours is to you. It may be very diverse in so many different ways, with many subtleties of which you know nothing and we cannot even hope to explain. Even one sphere may contain, as I'm sure it must do and does, thousands of different conditions of life. We are talking here of a world within worlds, within worlds, where space is an unknown quantity, so vast, so tremendous, that you cannot give it a geographical area or mileage. If you can take away the limitations which you must to some extent apply to the material plane, and realize the vastness of the world of spirit, inhabited by untold millions upon millions upon millions of souls, all in varying degrees of evolution, for that is what it really amounts to. And that there are those who have lived, as you would term time, although it doesn't really apply to us, thousands upon thousands of years and spirits, who are living, as it were, in a condition of life, these evolved ones, so far removed from material thought and material condition of life, that their whole being is truly spiritual. And they have lost, over the centuries of experience of time, all that is base and all that is material, and have become in the fullness of time perfected beings, as far as we can accept or understand the meaning or term of perfection. But even there, with the realization of a greatness yet to come, and a vastness of space yet to enter and to discover, where there are dimensions of life so far removed from yours, where there are opportunities beyond belief for all life by its very nature, if it is to exist and be recognizable, must be progressive, must be constantly one of change, movement, for life is by its very nature fundamentally movement. Nothing remains the same. Nothing is still, and yet there can be a stillness of peace within one's innermost soul that is beyond description. But none of us, not one of us, in a sense, remain stationary. That is, life movement, indeed life began, as far as one can tell, and I now refer to the material rather than the spiritual, although in a sense it applies to the spiritual equally as much and more so, but in a higher and a different form and sense. But life on earth came through movement and friction. It was never still, never, as it were, placid. It is impossible, of course, in words to depict or describe fully what one wishes to convey. But if you can see yourselves as you should be able to see yourselves, as you really are, if you can dig deep down within, as Christ said and all the other great prophets said, there you will find the true self. There you will find within yourself that power that will enable you to become truly a spiritual being. The physical aspect of life, while you live it, is important. It is vitally important. That is why in certain instances it is necessary for some souls to return, to incarnate, to make up for lost time, lost experience. Although this is not, on this occasion at least, for me to discuss reincarnation, I would not have you think that this does not necessarily apply under certain conditions for certain individuals. And indeed, in some instances, the great souls have returned deliberately to choose to do a certain work, to bring enlightenment into the world temporarily, to inhabit a physical body, that they may through that body express the power of the Holy Spirit and what it really and truly means. All the great prophets, all the great teachers were old souls, incarnated deliberately and purposefully to serve humanity at certain periods of history and time, that that generation and other generations to follow would have a guiding hand, that they could, as it were, be pointers on the path of spiritual progression. But of course, we only know too well that often man misinterprets, sometimes unfortunately builds up material barriers which impede spiritual progress. Indeed, unfortunately, we have seen it over and over again. Though great good may ensue from the lives of the teachers and the prophets and the good that they have done in that time and age, we have seen also, through the misinterpretation, often by zealous and sincere men, great injury and great unhappiness brought into being. And there, of course, we come, as we must come, to the good and the evil thereof. We come to that which is termed the black and the white. And we see humanity in the mass, as it were, neither black nor white, but the in-between, the human element as such, the vast majority of human beings taking a middle course, seeking light, and yet at times dimming that very light by their foolishness and stupidity. But this, it seems, is necessary. For it would be wrong to assume that only from good can we find enlightenment. Quite often we must make mistakes. We must do things which teach us listenest. The pupil in the schoolroom does not necessarily only learn by his achievements. He learns equally by his mistakes. We must look upon ourselves as children passing through varying classes in the school of life. And if our teachers are good and kind and strong, we learn more quickly and more happily and more surely. But we must not always assume that all our teachers are wise. They are oft times in themselves frail. Though they have much knowledge, they are not necessarily the purveyors of all truth. That is why I think every human being who seeks truth must take truth from whatever source it may come. And he must analyze and, if necessary, criticize. And if he is not ready to accept, he must, by his very effort over a period of time, make it so that eventually he can accept more. This is a slow growth, a slow progress. We are, as it were, in our infancy, though oft times we like to assume that we have reached a pinnacle of progress and that we can look down and see how far we have progressed. This, in a sense, may be so. But as we climb higher and higher in knowledge and in grace, the more humble we become, the more contrite, in a sense, are we, because we realize how little, how small we are in truth, and how we strive to enter into higher aspects of it. And as we go forward, we are ever conscious of those who are less fortunate. And in our strivings for a higher form of life and a higher realization of God's will and purpose, the more conscious we become of those less fortunate. And we sometimes, like the Good Samaritan, though we are eager to go forward and reach the great city of great promise and joy, we see those by the wayside less fortunate, who are no longer able to make the effort, who have become disillusioned and disheartened, and who are sick in mind and in body, who are weak and have lost faith and the way, and we stay a while. The great souls of spirit who come to you from varying degrees of spiritual endeavor, of place, choose to halt their own progress and come return through the spheres to the earth to endeavor to uplift you, to guide you, to inspire you, that in your turn you might not only of yourselves be helped, but that you too shall be like the Samaritan of old. On your sojourn, on that road of spiritual progress, you will stay a while longer and help those less fortunate, teaching, enlightening, and strengthening those of your fellow men who need that help that you give. It is why we together, working as we do, in harmony and in love, stress upon you the urgency and the need to give forth the teaching of the Spirit, as Christ and all the great prophets and teachers of old endeavored to give forth light in the darkness. So do we and you, and all shall receive that light according to that which they are able to accept and understand. But there are many who dwell in darkness who need that glimpse that you can give, and who will be, by that effort that you make, so uplifted, so strengthened, that they shall journey on further to greater enlightenment. It is a great joy and a great blessing as I look back on the past efforts, realizing that here and there we have accomplished perhaps more than we can fully understand or know. But as I look forward to this year of promise in which we work together, I know that it shall be a year of true progression spiritually, and that we shall enable many to see that light.
And with those words, the talk by Brother Boniface came to an end.